Elizabeth Evans, and I'm a homeschooling mom of four young kids. I'm figuring this out as I go, but I'm here to talk to Bonnie, who has been writing and speaking on the subject for over a decade and has been homeschooling for three decades.
My name's Bonnie Landry. I've got seven kids. They're ages 13 to 33. I've been homeschooling for 29 years. I'm a wife, a mom, a grandma. I'm a speaker and a writer, and I'm an advocate of joy. So we're here to provide this podcast so that homeschooling can look like you imagined it to be. How are you? Good. You guys still have company there and doing some fun stuff, it looks like.
Yes. It's been great. It's the beauty of homeschooling. You get to vacation and do other things while everybody else is in school.
Yeah, I know. We never, ever take holidays in July and August.
Right. No, and it's so hot then too.
I know. No, it's a lovely thing. And I feel really fortunate that that's just part of our life, that we don't have to decide around those parameters.
Yeah, it's cool. Well, and we used it as a homeschooling opportunity because we were up in Mackinac on the island. And so there's Fort Mackinac. And so we got to see some history, and my kids got to see cannons being shot off. You know, they're dummy cannons. You know, the blank bullets for the rifles. And my daughter hated it, and she would cry because the boom.
I saw your pictures look beautiful with the full colors and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, it was gorgeous.
Living history communities and museums are so good. Just so, so amazing.
Yeah. So,
and there's lots, and especially in the eastern U.S., we found there was lots when we were traveling there.
Oh, tons. You've got Gettysburg and all that.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah.
That's my dream, is a family road trip East Coast to do all the history in a couple years.
Well, you know, when we did a first big road trip, because I never wanted to go on a road trip when I had little babies.
Yeah.
So our youngest turned five. My husband had always wanted to road trip. So we thought, okay, let's do this. But we'd been studying American history, which most Canadians don't do to any extent. But I felt my kids should have some grounding in American history because it's so sort of tied into ours as well. And anyway, so we planned this 5-week road trip where we went through Quebec and down the Eastern Seaboard. As far as, where did we go? As far as West Virginia, I guess.
Okay.
And it was amazing. But we did, the main thing that I wanted to do was the Freedom Trail the Revolutionary War Trail in the Boston area.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
So we did that whole trail, which is, you know, primarily walkable.
Yeah.
So over several days we did that. But what happened was on our trip, we came across several sites that were part of a Civil War trail, which I knew nothing about.
Okay.
And so it's like a couple of hundred miles long, but you can do this road trip going from one Civil War site to another. Wow. Which looked amazing.
Yeah.
So
that's cool. Yeah. Those road trips are so much fun.
Way fun.
Yeah. And then I've also heard that this weekend is you guys celebrate Thanksgiving.
Yes. Yeah, that's interesting because I kind of forget that that we have different Thanksgivings. Yeah. And we've often pondered sort of, okay, why is Canadian Thanksgiving, you know, a month or 6 weeks before yours? And we assume it's because the weather here is colder, and so harvest is something that would have happened a lot earlier.
Okay,
probably.
Yeah.
But, you know, it depends where you are, right? So I don't really know the answer to that. I should probably do some research on it. But interestingly, Canadian Thanksgiving, you know, there's some traditions around it for sure, but it's not like your Thanksgiving.
Okay.
You know, it's not the huge holiday where, you know, we've heard that more people travel home for Thanksgiving than they do for Christmas, right?
Yeah.
That's a big traveling holiday. Probably not this year. But
right.
It's not a big, huge deal like that, mm-hmm. right? You know, I mean, it's a long weekend. There's a statutory holiday on the Monday, you know, and of course, everybody has a big dinner and whatnot. Everybody would have their own sort of family traditions, but not the big deal, kind of the kickoff to the Christmas season and all of that, like you guys have. So, yeah,
okay.
So it's a much quieter holiday. It's actually a nice holiday because it's usually very quiet, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever family's close by is probably going to get together. But yeah, I like it. It kind of feels like a quiet holiday.
So will you still do, you know, like kind of traditional turkey or ham or mashed potatoes or?
Yeah, okay. Definitely have the very sort of traditional turkey dinner kind of thing. Okay. This year I am quite pleased with myself because I had bucket loads of pears to use up for my pear tree. So I made our own pear cranberry sauce for turkey.
Ooh, yeah. That sounds amazing. Maybe you should share the recipe.
Good idea. I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah. So closer to our Thanksgiving, you'll have to share some of your, what Thanksgiving looks like for you guys.
Yeah, I will. And I mean, of course, every family has those different traditions, but Overall, it's kind of the same.
Eat a lot.
Yes, far too much. Yeah. Okay. So
I do apologize. We were supposed to interview somebody today and it didn't work out to do that today. So sometime the next week or two, we'll get to that interview. But so Elizabeth's got some stalker questions.
Yes. I thought it would be good to start with this question that we got from somebody. And it's kind of a three-parter, maybe more. How do you homeschool on a limited schedule? You know, if you only have so many hours a day, you know, whether there's extracurriculars or, you know, work. So I guess, how do you kind of, I don't want to say choose, because you probably shouldn't leave things out, but.
Right. Yeah. And I think one of the greatest gifts of homeschooling is that we have this opportunity to combine all the natural things that are combinable in learning, right? Mm-hmm. Because of course, you know, as we've talked about before, you know, social studies is a science. Social studies is an opportunity to write, to discuss, to relay stories, you know, so all of the language arts come into social studies. You know, almost every subject is cross-disciplinary, right? You know, even phys ed, you know, your kids could do, there could be lots of discussion. There could be an essay on, you know, what does health mean? What does fitness look like? What is good nutrition? You know, we have so many opportunities to sort of create an interdisciplinary environment that's very, very natural, right? Mm-hmm. And so the separating out of subjects is very much a school paradigm, right? And I don't think our brains ever needed to do that, right? I think that, you know, it was just a convenient way to sort of, a more convenient way to check off boxes. I think that's the bottom line, right? But I think that ultimately what happens is when we, you know, we go to school and we live in this very sort of different environment, our subjects are all broken up. And then, you know, our age groups are all broken up into very sort of, you know, small, narrow paths of age groups, you know, the 6 and 7 year olds, 8 and 9 year olds, you know, by grade. And then we get out into the work world and everything has to become interdisciplinary again. And we have to learn to work with people of all ages again. Right. So, anyway, so that just to sort of lay the foundation of kind of what I'm going to say next, but, you know, so here we are with 3 hours. I think 3 hours is plenty of time to get done the things that you need to get done. So I think if I remember correctly, the one of those questions or part of that question was about, I need to fit in particular things, right?
Right.
I don't know if you wrote that down, but it seems to me there was like, I need to do poetry. I need to do memory work. I need to do this. So poetry, grammar, spelling, memory work, punctuation, capitalization, grammar rules, sentence structure, all of those things can be handled in a dictation lesson that's 5 to 10 minutes long, right? And, you know, the power of that, I just cannot express that enough, the power of that as a tool for all of those things, anything, you know, in the sort of language arts world is just so effectively handled through dictation, right? And so a great place to study poetry, you don't have to be doing a poem all the time, but you know, three or four poems during the year as part of your dictation, is a great way to introduce poetry. You have an opportunity to talk about poetry while you're doing dictation, right? Mm-hmm. You know, what's the rhyme? What's the rhythm? What's the, meter of this poem? For older kids, you could delve into the sort of higher level aspect of poetry. What's the theme of this poem, right? We have so much opportunity there. And so to me, that's taking something that you could look at. If you broke all those things up and needed to spend an hour, hour and a half addressing all those little things, in your grammar workbook and your poetry study and all of those, and your memory work, cram that into one 10-minute, episode, why would we not do that, right? So that's a huge thing. So definitely one of the ways that I think we can condense really effectively. And again, with math, when you're actually sitting with your child, even an old, a little bit older child, a 10-year-old or whatever, if you're sitting with them and kind of going through their math lesson with them for 10 minutes or so, 15 minutes, obviously as they get a little older, that's going to be a little bit longer or a little less time, depending on how well they're grabbing it.
Right.
But it's much more time effective to sit with them, go through the math lesson, and let them make sure that they know it, make sure they understand it, let them ask their questions, let them not be frustrated sitting there staring at one problem for an extended period of time, and walk through it with them for a few minutes, then let them work on their own with it as far as they're able to, right? So the more we sort of guide, right, disciple, the more effective that learning is going to be, as opposed to sort of just standing there being stumped at something, right? So would it be helpful, do you think, if I gave a bit of a snapshot of what our morning looks like, and then, because that is the 3-hour kind of window, that'd be helpful, do you think?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And then you too, if you want to share yours, because you're more in the thick of it. Right now, I get up, I read, Lydia and I read together. Then I sit down and do dictation with her. She's independent with math, but I just sort of hang around, while she's doing math, so that I can be aware of, if she has a question or a problem, something she doesn't understand, which rarely happens at this age, but, I make myself available to that. And then she's, off doing her own thing. But back in the day when I had, lots of young people, we would sit and read together, usually around, 8:30 or 9 o'clock. We would sit down and read together. All of our history and science studies would come out of that reading that we did together. So say, for example, I'd read a book on, maybe we're studying weather. So I'd read for 5 or 10 minutes on weather, and we would discuss that, and we would look at the pictures, and we might get out the encyclopedia. Then I'd maybe read for 20 minutes or half an hour from our novel. So there's our literature study and our history study, right? So then we would be discussing what was going on in the novel. Any new words that my kids didn't know, we'd be talking about what they meant. So we're doing vocabulary. Then we would get out the encyclopedias and look up maybe some of the things that came up in the chapter. If we were studying Vikings, we might look up what Viking ships look like, or where the Vikings, started from and where they traveled to. What were their ceremonies? Whatever came up in that particular chapter, we'd be looking at that. So that's our history study. That's a lot of language arts there through discussion. Of course, because we're looking up always everything on a map, whenever we're studying, we're studying geography as well. So then maybe say by, 9:45, 10 o'clock, we've accomplished all of that. We do a little tidy up, and then I start to sit down and work with my kids. So at minimum, I'm going to do dictation and math with each child, right?
Yeah.
So I sit down, dictation takes maybe 5 to 10 minutes. And math takes maybe 10 to 15 minutes, 20 minutes maximum, per child. And then I'm moving on to the next child. And then at lunch, we kind of repeat the reading process again. So again, we're accomplishing a lot of reading in the day. So that's a really quick snapshot of what it looks like. Mm-hmm. Very easy to accomplish my young kids by noon, definitely by high school. My high schoolers would be working on their own in the afternoon, you know, whatever they had left to do, whether it was, you know, a textbook they were working from or writing or whatever. You know, if they needed my help, they'd pull me in. But we were primarily done by lunchtime. So, or, you know, including lunchtime, because I read a lot of education happens over meals in our house. So, so what does your morning look like? Because I know you have a similar.
Yeah. So fairly similar. I think the only thing is that sometimes I'll let my kids pick what we do first. That way they're kind of a part of that. And then they actually pay attention better if they're able to decide what we're starting with. So they usually practice piano. After they eat breakfast, I have them make their beds, brush their teeth, get dressed. And then typically we start with, we'll read from the Children's Illustrated Bible and we'll read what the saint of the day is. And then we'll do our morning prayers. And then after that, I'll either read history or geography. We'll do one or the other. We don't usually do both in the same day in terms of like specific studies, you know, they're constantly learning geography. Yeah. And then I'll read Life of Fred, which they love. And then I have them orally respond answers instead of actually writing them down. And then I'll take turns doing dictation / poetry work with both of the ones in school. I just recently got my 4-year-old sandpaper letters because he,
Oh, fun. I've heard of these. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to say he's behind because I actually haven't really formally sat down with him to work on letters. But he was having a hard time, really writing. Like I'd have him try tracing letters and he just wasn't great at it. So I figured sandpaper letters would be better for him to really kind of understand the motion and the feel. And so I'll do those with him. And then my 6-year-old will do Saxon math. I'll sit with him and do that. So that's kind of our morning. We'll do read aloud. Sometimes we'll fit it in the morning. Sometimes I wait until my daughter's napping so that I can actually read her climbing all over me.
Yes. You learn to read really loud, right?
Yes, yes. Learn to read while she's grabbing the book because she doesn't want to listen to that book.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, so that's kind of our morning. And again, like I said, sometimes it's different orders, just depending on, I really learn to read my kids and what they're able to, you know, retain. You know, like if they've had a late night, we're definitely not going to start with math. We're going to do more of the stuff where they can just kind of really wake up and come to terms with the fact we're doing schoolwork.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Yeah. And I mean, reading your kids is such an important skill anyways, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, you know, lots of weeks go sideways and, you know, you just sort of do the bare minimum and whatnot. But yeah, like, I mean, even with your household of 4 kids, you know, you're still wrapping up by lunchtime usually, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, but the combining of things is always a really good idea. And I think that that's, biggest advantage to homeschooling really is just our ability to have the freedom to do that. Right.
Right. Yeah.
So was there other questions sort of, related to that one?
Yes. There's kind of a part 2. So with the time constraint, you know, a limited schedule, how do you make kind of learning happen when you've got, children with learning challenges such as dyslexia or, you know, perhaps a child who is developmentally behind, where you really do need almost one-on-one time for every single thing.
I mean, I think that because so much of our learning is discussion-based, you know, I think that that's really good for dyslexic kids, right? You know, a lot of oral stuff happening. I have a friend who's has a couple of kids who are dyslexic, and she was really grateful for the idea of dictation because she said she felt it was the only thing that really helped to. It was so tailored to exactly what they were at, where they were at, mm-hmm. that it was really helpful to be able to, in a tactile, verbal, listening way, pulling in all the senses to address language, right? Mm-hmm. For a kid who this was finding this more challenging, and address reading, you know? And so, you know, I don't really have personal experience with that, but just from a good friend of mine saying, you know, this, it was the only thing that I found was because it was so tailored exactly to them and their particular issues, right? And, you know, kind of being, giving her a real snapshot of how their brain worked by discussion, through discussion, and saying, okay, you know, how can I make this more clear, in this very intimate setting to make it work for you, right? To make it so individualized. In the books, I know I talk a lot about these books in Ruth Beechick's 3 R's, which used to come as 3 books, are now 1 book, the 3 R's. In her book on language, where she talks about teaching children to read, she said, basically what she's saying is, you know, you don't really need to get stressed out about your child and how they learn to read. Like, you introduce certain concepts, right? You introduce ideas, you introduce sounds. But in terms of all the little details, eventually they just get all that.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, just by reading aloud to them, by having them read, they sort of figure out the code, and they decode it. Most kids decode it in their own unique way. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, you know, we, it's important to not sort of get caught up in, you know, doing this right. You know, the fact that you're doing it is going to help them learn their decoding method that works best for them. Right. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, so about sort of learning delayed kids, I think also, even for a kid who's quite learning delayed, you know, you can't get blood from a stone, right?
Yeah.
And so you got to take that kid where they're at and move them forward. And that's all. So to try and make, you know, that kid, you know, maybe they're 12 and they're working at a, you know, the level of a grade 3 or grade 4 child or whatever, you can't make them do more than their brain can do, right?
Yeah.
So all you can do is move them forward. And so I think that it's really important to kind of just let go. It doesn't mean, like, you know, in terms of the context of, in the context of how much time we spend on homeschooling and trying to fit it into a 3-hour block or a limited time block, you know, if we were spending 1.5 hours or 2 hours with that one child, mm-hmm. they're not going to necessarily learn more. In fact, you know, it's, to me, it's going to raise all kinds of, you know, hackles, because no kid who's already developmentally delayed is going to want to take on more. They're just going to tune out, right?
Sure.
And so we'd be far better off in the 5-minute chunks, 10-minute chunks, just in a loving way, just spending our time with them, taking them from where they are to the next step. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's all, you know. And I've talked about my one son before who was, you know, things took a long, he's a smart kid, but things took a long time to gel. I would say overall, things took 2 or 3 times longer to gel for him than they did for his siblings. Right now, you know, he's in his 3rd year of college. He's doing great. He's academically doing wonderfully, you know, but I mean, everything just came really slow, but eventually he just caught up. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think that's really important about the developmentally delayed. Spending more time with them isn't going to move them along more quickly. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
So,
well, I thought of a story about my son. So he's 6 and I've talked before about how he's pretty advanced with math. Well, the other day we were sitting in the car and he just, all of a sudden, light bulb went on and he goes, "Oh, I understand 3:30 because there are 60 minutes in an hour and 3 + 3 = 6. So 30 + 30 = 60. And this whole time, because he got it, but he got it even more, you know. Yeah. Just all of a sudden, it was so funny. We just kind of laughed and we're like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
So,
you know, years ago, my daughter, I may have shared this story already, but my oldest daughter, you know, I can't remember how old she was, 6 or 7. And I thought I should be sort of, you know, talking about time with her. And, you know, so I picked up this little sort of time workbook, right? Mm-hmm. And so we opened it up and we were, you know, reading through it, and she was just completely blindsided. Like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And she got really frustrated. Like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, this is nothing of the workbook was making any sense. And so I thought, gee, you know, she's not totally not ready for this. So that's okay. You know, we'll just put it away. And she was kind of upset. She wanted to understand it, but it was like, just not understanding. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know, 6 months or 10 months later or something, I brought out the same book and I opened it up and it just all made sense to her. And we just finished the whole workbook in a couple of days. And that was, oh, okay, now I understand time. And so, you know, the mystery of readiness, I have a friend who uses that phrase all the time, the mystery of readiness, yeah. Right? And so being really sensitive to the readiness of those things is so vital, right?
Sure, yeah. So I guess this question could fall along what we've been talking about. So do you have any recommendations for books for somebody who reads well, but might also read at a slower pace? And so, you know, those books like Harry Potter, there's just, the print is too small, there's too many words on the page, and so just read, and then they're not comprehending what they're reading. Or they might comprehend little bits here and there.
Right, okay, so like, so you're talking about the student, like is there books for kids?
Yeah.
That would be a good starting place. I mean, there's a lot of short novels, right? Yeah. And I know that sometimes those, even me as an adult, like if there's, you know, there's been books I've wanted to read for years, and if they're 2 inches thick, that's a kind of a mental block.
Yeah.
Right. Sure. And so, you know, and I'm a fast reader. I'm not, you know, so it's not, it would be difficult for me. It's just that kind of the size of it is an impediment. Yeah. And so, I would say, you know, choose novels that are not going to have that impact on the child, right? They're not going to have sort of a knee-jerk reaction. This can happen with math textbooks as well, right? Sometimes a kid, you know, they're 12 years old and they look at this inch and a half thick math textbook and they think, ah, how am I going to do that, right? You know, sometimes we have to address that particular situation. So I would say start with novels that are small, right? If they're not reading novels at all, there's some beautiful sort of, I'm thinking of a couple. One is like Sarah Plain and Tall. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple, if I think of them, I'll let you know. Abel's Island, Roni the Robber's Daughter. Those would be a couple of novels that are fun, but definitely like a short chapter book. Okay. Right. You know, so that's a good place to start. But also even something like Narnia, you know, Narnia is much more, most versions kind of have bigger print on the page. You know, it's not like reading Lord of the Rings, you know, where you're trying to get a manageable sized book. Mm-hmm. You know, and therefore what you sacrifice then is, you know, how many words per page, you know, there's a lot more words per page when you're trying to take a big book and make it manageable to actually hold and read, right?
Right.
So, you know, so that's something that I think, you know, we should look at. So make sure that you're choosing something that's not too challenging. Also, one of the things that we have at our disposal is, what do they call them? Large print novels, mm-hmm. right? And they're actually for people who have, you know, eyesight issues, mm-hmm. but they're also really good for kids who maybe are less, more threatened by, you know, how many words are on the page, right?
Sure.
So you can get these big print novels. So that might be a really good place to start, you know.
Okay.
I think also sorry, go back to the original question for a minute, Elizabeth. I just want to make sure I'm actually.
Well, this is my question personally.
Okay.
Son is, he's a good reader. And so this year, but I wanted to work with him and have him read aloud to me just to kind of massage that muscle.
Yeah.
And so we started with Indian in the Cupboard, which is for his age group. And I don't know if it was, he just wasn't really into the story, but it was, he could only do maybe 2 or 3 pages a day. And it'd just be kind of really slow. And yeah. you could tell he was just not really that interested. And yeah. so then I tried switching to Harry Potter because I read that at his age. And again, it was just kind of like, I'm not really into this. And so I can't tell yeah. if it's a, I'm just picking books that are too tough or if it's just a disinterest in those books, those topics.
Well, and they're both fantasy, right? Yeah. A lot of boys are, a lot of kids aren't interested in fantasy at all. But I would mm-hmm. say, you know, lots of times my boys would definitely not be
okay
into fantasy. They did eventually really start to like that genre. But for some people too, like if they're very much, you know, kind of in this world kind of people, mm-hmm. the idea of fantasy is just like, why? You
know? Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And the other thing too is like books like, you know, Magic Treehouse. Yeah. Those kind of things are really engaging. Not a lot of words on the page, but also more sort of sciencey oriented, right? So even though they're in story format, you know, that's a great tool too. And you know, some kids are just not into fiction either, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, let them read nonfiction. That's something that the nice thing about like Magic Treehouse, and there's other series like that, that it's still a story format, sure. but, you know, they're learning a lot in it as well, okay. you know, and, you know, I mean, I know adults who don't really get jazzed about fiction, right?
Right.
So yeah, I would try something nonfiction or, a little more, maybe even a topic that's just a little more, grabbing. There's a book called, Vikings by Elizabeth Janeway. It's a novel.
Okay.
It's a simple, it's a fairly easy read. It's a little bit longer novel. It's not huge, but you know, maybe the size of one of the Narnia books.
Okay.
But because it's all about Vikings, it was one of those books that my boys just loved.
Okay.
Right. And yeah, so that's, and that particular topic, there's a few really good books on Vikings. I don't know if that's of interest to him, but
yeah,
you know, it could be, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So but that particular one is well done.
How do you avoid headbutting with
children? Ooh, that's not a 5-minute question. okay, how do you avoid headbutting? I think that sidestepping headbutting is our best go-to, right? When you choose to sidestep headbutting, that doesn't mean that the child's behavior gets ignored. Okay, so I just want to qualify that.
Okay.
It means that you don't engage. Okay, if the child's following you around the house, trying to get a response from you, you know, that behavior has to be dealt with, but you don't necessarily need to be reactive to it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm going to just sort of narrow the definition of headbutting here for a moment. And this may lead to more questions. So how do you avoid headbutting? So say, for example, you're asking a child to do something, mm-hmm. okay? And they are, you know, giving you flack about that. So let's talk about that particular genre of headbutting, okay? So, you know, again, I believe that everything we are trying to teach our kids, school subjects, discipline, helping out around the house, whatever it is we're trying to teach them, good manners, whatever it is, it's all the same process, okay? Mm-hmm. So it could be, you know, you're trying to get them to speak to you politely. It could be that you're trying to get them to do their math, okay? So, you know, if the child is saying, you know, no, I'm not going to do that, right? You know, we can't force them to do it. We can't force polite words out of their mouth. It's not possible, right? All we can do is threaten or bribe them, right? That's you know, the only tool we have in a sense for extracting what we want out of them. But of course, we don't want to do that. We don't want to threaten or bribe them. So the other alternative is to leave it alone, mm-hmm. right? So you know, that doesn't mean we're ignoring bad behavior, right? It means that we take that, you know, for this, say, for example, you know, talking back to you, okay, they're mouthing off at you. You know, our response to that can be, you know, you're having a really tough time being polite right now. And I know that's not normally what you're like. So, you know, I'll talk with you about this some other time, but I'm not going to go down this path with you. Right. And then actually don't go down the path with them. So it's very easy to get sucked into a path. You know, for example, their response could be, "Oh, you always do that to me. You never have time to talk to me." Right. You know, but if we kind of stick to our guns, I'm not going down that path right now, you know, and you know, I hear that you're frustrated. I can totally hear that you're frustrated, but you know, we'll need to address this some other time because this is not the time to clear up problems. Right. Mm-hmm. So keep going back to what it is you need, acknowledging their frustration, keep going back to what it is, you're going to need before actual discussion can happen. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, and just go about your business. Right. Now they might throw themselves on the floor and have a big tantrum. They might scream at you. They might whatever. But we can ignore that, right? And we can come back to that. It's like, wow, you were really frustrated. When they're soft, and you know they're soft, they're either going to cry or they're going to come back to you and say, you know, "I'm sorry, I was being so nasty. I don't know what came over me," or whatever. You can tell as their mom when they're soft, right? Mm-hmm. And it's real. And then you can give them a big hug. You can say, you know, "Listen, you know, I know you're really frustrated. I don't really know what it was all about, but I'd love to talk to you about that," right? So dealing with the problem outside of the circumstances. So if you take headbutting then to sort of a homeschooling situation, you know, you're trying to get them to read to you, right? You can't force the words out of their mouth, right? And so if they're having a big hissy fit, you know, or cultural go-to is, if you don't do this, you're going to X, you know, or if you don't do this, I'm going to do this. Or if you do this, you'll get this prize, right? That's our cultural go-to. But if we just have the wherewithal, and this takes discipline for ourselves, right? It's discipline for this kind of response is, you know what? I can see that reading to me right now is not going to work. Okay. You know, you do need to read to me, but we're going to address that later, right? I can see you're really frustrated. You know, do you want to cuddle for a little while? And maybe they're going to say, yeah, and then they, you know, snuggle up to you. Maybe they're going to say no and storm away, right? We don't know. But in whatever it takes to get them soft, and that might be 20 minutes, that might be 2 hours, we don't know how long that's going to take. We have to be willing to deal with the problem outside of the circumstances, right?
Right.
And the more grace we pour out onto our children, the more responsive they become to us. Yeah. Right. And I know sometimes it's hard to picture if you're caught in that carrot and stick kind of paradigm with your kids. It can be difficult to think, okay, well, they're going to respond well to this. Okay. Mm-hmm. It will take time for that to change, but they will become more responsive and more cooperative to you. That's a guarantee.
Yeah.
Right. The better the relationship is.
Well, what about something, because I know I've had to use this in the past, you know, it's not like is this a carrot and stick thing? If, you know, you've got a child that just is protesting doing any work, but you know they're anticipating a neighborhood kid getting home from school, you know,
right?
Like, is it a carrot and stick to say, "I know so-and-so is going to be home soon. You're not going to be able to play until you've gotten your studies done." Is that the same thing, or is that?
It's not. I guess sometimes the upshot of, you know, carrot and stick versus, you know, sort of relational parenting or non-punitive parenting is the same, in the sense that, you know, sometimes there are consequences for our behavior that are truly natural consequences. You know, you often see this question: what's a natural consequence for my child doing X? Well, if you have to ask the question, it's not a natural consequence, right? Mm-hmm. It's a natural consequence because they don't get to do the thing, right?
Right.
What's important is we're not badgering them and dangling, right? Like, that's, you know, like, you know, you're not going to get to play with your kid. You know, it's like, yes, you know, the neighbor kid walks, you know, knocks on the door, and you say, you know, "I'm really sorry, but my son hasn't gotten his work done yet, so he's not allowed to come out." And that's all, right? And not the "I told you so's," and not the "if you had done your work, blah, blah, blah." So take away the lecturing, take away the badgering, take away the dangling of the carrot in front of him. Mm-hmm. You know, just state it and leave it alone, mm-hmm. right? you know, and the school of natural consequences is present, right?
Right.
But we can be, and we can be empathetic to them. We don't have to say, you know, see, we can be, you know, really nice. Oh, I'm so sorry. You know, I wish it didn't work that way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I have to get my housework done before I go to bed at night, you know, or I have to go do my housework done before, you know, I can go out and play outside with you guys or go out and do the things that I'd like to do, or go on my computer or whatever. And if they see you, you know, living that life as well, that's really important too, to see a, you know, parent living a disciplined life. You know, but that's just the reality. We have to get some of our work done first and then, you know, we can do the fun stuff. Right. And, you know, I mean, kids respond well to that in general, and they might have a hissy fit and we can comfort them. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, that was hard. It was hard for you to see me send your friend away.
Right.
So tomorrow's a new day.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And it might be like, sometimes, you know, we see the kid, okay, they're winding up and they're going to have a 2-hour hissy fit about this thing. Right. And you're not going to get the schoolwork out of them at that point anyways. Right. So whatever. Right. It's, sometimes it's, you think, okay, just this once I'll let you play. I think we it's better to just let them feel the disappointment, right? Yeah. Be there to comfort them. You know, I'm so sorry. I wish that had worked out differently. You know, and without the lecture, just comfort, right? Mm-hmm. So hope that's helpful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So don't forget, you can submit your questions to Make Joy Normal, my Facebook page, or message me directly on Instagram at Make Joy Normal, or via my website. My email's on my website. So keep the questions coming.
Thank you.
Have a great week, Elizabeth.
You too. Bye.